From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. And on this day, Maine U.S. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is taking issue with the state's cuts to methadone treatment centers and is asking the feds to help restore the funds. Tens of thousands of Maine workers could soon be eligible for more overtime pay under a proposed federal rule change. And a new Maine law that takes effect this week gives residents another layer of protection against identity theft. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by listeners like you and by Lee Auto Malls, serving Maine since 1936 and a proud supporter of MPBN Radio, with locations throughout the state and online at leeauto.com.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Maine's cuts to methadone treatment centers have come to the attention of the state's first district representative, Shelley Pingree, who is asking the federal government for help restoring payments. For the second time in 3 years, Pingree has written to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services asking that cuts be restored so that more Mainers can have access to the most effective treatment for opiate addiction. Susan Sharon has more.
Until 5 years ago, methadone treatment providers had been receiving $80 a week for each Maine Care patient they served. The rate had been in place for more than a decade. But in 2010, the Baldacci administration cut the weekly reimbursement rate to $72. 2 years later, the LePage administration reduced the rate again to $60. Together, that's a 25% cut. And Jim Cohen, a spokesman for a coalition of methadone providers in Maine, says it's not sustainable. In August, for example, an outpatient methadone clinic in York County closed its doors.
That was one of the major drivers for the decision to close the clinic in Stanford and has been a tremendous burden on the ability of providers in Maine to continue to provide treatment services to patients with opiate addiction.
Cohen says another methadone clinic has chosen not to treat Maine Care patients because the reimbursement rate is so low, among the lowest in the country. He also points to statistics from the Maine Office of Substance Abuse that show the number of Mainers seeking treatment for opiate addiction has more than tripled in recent years, to more than 3,400 last year. But the number of people enrolled in outpatient methadone treatment has declined. In a letter to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Pingree calls the issue a matter of urgent concern.
We got this moment in time where I think everybody is really worried about the increasing rate of addictions out there, insufficient treatment. We all know there aren't enough places for addicts to go to get treatment. Yet the state is making such severe cuts. So it just seems like a huge problem and it's going in the wrong direction. And so we've asked CMS to look at it.
Pingree says the state's proposed rate cuts are still pending with the federal agency, even though the state has gone ahead and implemented them. Pingree says it's also possible that the rate reductions violate the Access Clause of the Medicaid Act, which requires payments to be adequate to ensure quality of care and enlist enough providers. But David Sorensen, a spokesman for the Department of Health and Human Services, says the loss of one methadone clinic doesn't necessarily make that case.
So we're not too concerned about that point raised by her. We think this is mostly an attempt to grab a headline in the matter and not a serious attempt to solve Maine's heroin crisis, something that Governor LePage and Commissioner Mayhew are committed to every single day.
Sorensen says the legislature, with the support of some Democratic leaders, endorsed the rate change for methadone treatment 3 years ago. And he thinks it's unlikely that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services would reverse that position. He says it's simply a matter of prioritizing scarce taxpayer dollars and health spending. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Next year, tens of thousands of Maine employees could be eligible for more overtime pay. A proposed rule change under the Federal Labor Standards Act would affect certain employees who earn between about $23,000 and $50,000 a year. Some say it's a long overdue boon for employees. But others say for those who hire them, the change will have unintended consequences. Patty White has the story.
The proposed federal rule change would essentially more than double the earning threshold for overtime pay. Right now, those earning below $23,660 a year are eligible. But under the proposed change, says Greg Frame, a Portland attorney,
if anyone is making below $50,440 a year, they will be entitled to overtime for any hour worked over 40 in a given work week.
And that $50,440 level would actually ratchet up every year.
You know, this restores overtime protections that have been lost to inflation.
Matt Schlobohm is executive director of the Maine AFL-CIO.
If you go back in time, most workers were covered by these kinds of protections, and that has been chipped away at and chipped away at and chipped away at. And I think most people would agree that it's just wrong if you're working 50 or 60 or 70 hours that you're not compensated in any way for that.
It's been 11 years since federal overtime regulations were updated. Julie Rabinowitz of the Maine Department of Labor says while the state wants employee wages to increase, it opposes this rule change.
It's just going to get messy before it gets better.
Rabinowitz says the jump in the wage threshold is too much too fast. She says it's going to be a particularly tough hit to employers in Maine, which is in the 40th percentile for wages nationally.
So Maine, where we have below average wages, is going to have more employers who have positions that fall underneath that $50,000 mark and are going to have a more difficult time because they're going to have more people they have to make up the pay difference with to get to $50,000.
If that employer wants to make their employees exempt from the regulation. But if some employees continue to earn below $50,000, says Chris Hall of the Portland Chamber of Commerce, the new rule creates an administrative puzzle.
In the world of email and texting and 24/7 connectivity, when does work stop? And if someone is only allowed to work 40 hours a week, if they go home and do email for 2 hours, does that mean they have to be paid overtime for those 2 hours? How do you track it? How do you manage it as an employer? And what happens if you don't?
Tony Payne of Clark Insurance says employers can turn to one level of protection in the form of employee practice liability insurance that's endorsed for Fair Labor Standards Act claims.
And what that kind of insurance does is that it adds to your policy coverage for attorney's fees with a sublimit of up to $100,000. So that really does give you a great deal of protection.
Another complexity for employers is that certain jobs, usually of the managerial type, are exempt from overtime requirements. Attorney Greg Frame says employers need to comb through job descriptions to make sure employees that are exempt from overtime aren't performing any duties that would make them eligible. Even though the proposed rule hasn't been finalized, Frame expects it will be adopted by early next year and employers must prepare.
The classic case here is forewarned is forearmed.
The Maine Department of Labor says employers who have questions about complying with the proposed rule should contact the department or consult with an attorney. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
For the first time in more than 6 years, the number of Mainers getting food stamps has dropped below 200,000. The State Department of Health and Human Services says in September, just over 199,000 people were enrolled in what's officially called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That's down from a peak of more than 255,000 in February of 2012. State officials cite Maine's falling unemployment rate from 8.3% to 4.5% over the 6-year period as one reason for the drop. Meanwhile, advocates for mental health consumers in Maine are questioning the state's plan to implement a new system for handling crisis calls and responses. Mal Leary has that story.
Earlier this year, the Department of Health and Human Services sought bids for a statewide telephone response system to handle mental health crises and to provide stabilization services for those individuals. That process is still underway, and some advocate groups are voicing concerns.
We find that DHHS lacks the capacity to enforce contracts.
Paula Gustafson is Community Outreach Coordinator for the Consumers Council System of Maine, a group that is federally mandated to represent mental health consumers in the state.
You can make a great bid, say you will do a lot of things, and then if you don't have anyone looking over your program, we lose greatly.
And Bernadette O'Donnell, an attorney with Disability Rights Maine, says there are also questions being raised about how DHHS will make sure that the provisions of any accepted contract will be followed.
Will anyone conduct utilization review? How many people are expected to staff the hotline? And will the RFP reduce the number of crisis stabilization units?
Lewiston Representative Peggy Rotendo, the co-chair of the Appropriations Committee, questions why the legislature has not been brought into the process of seeking requests for proposals for the new system, given the difficulties the department had in implementing a new transportation system for clients of the agency a few years ago.
The RFP doesn't seem to reflect best practices, that the concerns that were raised by providers and consumers are not reflected in the RFPs.
No one from DHHS was at the committee meeting to respond to the concerns, and in an email to the panel, Nick Adelson, the department's director of government relations and policy, says he's reluctant to comment because the state is actively seeking bids. Adelson offered to respond in writing within the limits of state contract policy. Committee co-chair Peggy Rotendo dismisses that argument.
Doesn't ring true for me. You can talk about why you are putting out an RFP. You can answer the kinds of questions that we had.
Rotendo and other committee members say they will seek additional information on the proposals that are pending. The committee meets again in November, which is after the deadline for proposals. The new crisis response systems are supposed to be in place January 1st. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
A new law that takes effect on Thursday provides Mainers with an added layer of protection against identity theft. The law was enacted this year after Maine lawmakers unanimously overrode Governor Paul LePage's attempt to veto it. The law makes it easier for consumers to freeze their credit reports, thereby denying criminals one of the best methods for stealing a person's ID. Maine is only the third state in the nation to introduce such a measure. Tom Porter has the details.
Retired machinist Tim Hamilton of Scarborough has not yet had his identity stolen, but almost every day, he says, he gets phone calls from people trying to elicit personal information from him.
They insist that they're giving you something, or they have a foreign bank that has money in it, and they want you to send them their name and a bank account that they could send to, you know, and it goes kind of on from there.
Hamilton was one of several seniors attending a community meeting at Scarborough Police Department Tuesday afternoon to learn more about protecting themselves from identity thieves. In particular, they're being advised how to make use of a new law taking effect this week.
Identity theft is a huge problem. It's estimated that literally every 2 seconds in the United States, someone's identity is stolen. Every 2 seconds.
Jane Margeson, Communications Director for AARP Maine, says one of the best ways to protect against ID theft is to freeze your credit report.
If you place a freeze on your credit report, you are actually blocking identity thieves from accessing your most sensitive information.
Up until now, consumers would have to pay $10 to each of the three consumer reporting agencies every time they want their credit report frozen or unfrozen.
It may not sound like a lot, but $10 for each of the three bureaus, that's $30 to turn it on, 30 off, 30 on. It adds up, and it's a great deterrent, especially if somebody is lower income. So this way, with it being free, there's really no reason for people not to take this very strong preventive measure.
From October 15th, Mainers of any age can freeze and unfreeze their credit report as needed, free of charge, through the use of a PIN number. Margeson suggests keeping your credit report frozen most of the time and unfreezing it only when a credit check is necessary, the purchase of a big-ticket item, such as a car, for example. Scarborough senior Tim Hamilton says it makes sense.
Sounds like a good idea, actually, if you put it that way. Yeah.
This certainly is the one single step that consumers can take if they want to block information.
But, says Will Lund of the Maine Bureau of Consumer Credit Protection, the measure does include some potential inconvenience.
That is that consumers who have frozen their files won't be able to for example, walk into a department store and accept an offer of a credit card from someone sitting at the store offering store credit.
For many consumers, however, Lund says this lack of access to instant credit is a small price to pay for enhanced protection against identity thieves, who last year victimized nearly 13 million Americans. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Is being invaded by another water-loving plant. Biologists in Maine and New Hampshire say they have confirmed the discovery of European naiad in the Salmon Falls River, which has shorelines in both states. Biologists say European naiad grows from a seed into 7-foot-long plants, and a 1-acre infestation can generate tens of millions of seeds per season. They say that allows the plant to overtake native lake habitats. Boaters in both states are being warned to check their vessels for any plant debris and to remove any found before and after using that section of the river. And yesterday was Columbus Day, a holiday that celebrates the anniversary of Christopher Columbus's arrival in the Americas. But in Maine, many were not celebrating the occasion. At Lake George Regional Park in Canaan, supporters of Indigenous Peoples Day used a talking circle, a drum song, and a round dance to share their views about the Italian explorer they associate with colonialism and enslavement. But they also paid tribute to the enduring traditions of Native people more than 500 years after the arrival of Columbus in America. Some even offered apologies.
Hi, I am John Slow. I'm from Canaan here. And I'm so sorry. I pray for forgiveness and understanding in the future.
My name is Karen Kuziak. I live in Fairfield. I fully support having an Indigenous Peoples Day and not having Columbus Day as our holiday in October.
Former Penobscot Chief Barry Dana said he hopes it's the beginning of a movement that will spread to other cities and states.
Native people don't recognize Columbus Day. We recognize our own survival. And to have non-natives also recognize that is very powerful. So I would hope that other cities and states as a whole drop that national holiday to begin with and then to consider adopting Indigenous Peoples Day.
But just a few miles up the road in Skowhegan, a group of residents calling themselves Skowhegan Indian Pride held a rally to celebrate their school's Indian mascot and to collect donations for a local food pantry and animal shelter. Skowhegan High School is the only school in Maine that still uses an Indian mascot, something Native people say is offensive and unnecessary. Jennifer Poirier, who organized the rally, says a vote by the school board earlier this year settled the issue, although she also acknowledged that hard feelings are not going away.
Local businesses who support the Skowhegan Indian Pride Group are being threatened by boycotts, and individuals are coming under attack for their personal views.
Poirier says the timing of the Indian Pride rally on Columbus Day was not a deliberate attempt to offend anyone, but merely a display of community spirit on a day that everyone could get together. Mullian Smith sees it differently. Smith is a member of the Penobscot Nation who has asked that the school stop using the Indian mascot.
And I think if they would expand their way of thinking, they could see that we're not about stealing anything or taking anything. It's about making things right.
Smith said whether the group's rally on Columbus Day was meant to be insulting or not, she believes it's only a matter of time before the mascot is retired, like so many others have been. And that's the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Patty White, Tom Porter, Mal Leary, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to know what you think about the program. You can let us know by emailing us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caritti. For all of us here at MPBN News, thanks for listening.